Yo, Ant, what up? It's Hendrix, you know the vibes. We gon' keep it all the way unfiltered. Hottest podcast in the game. Yep. Sinise Unfiltered. You rockin' with Sinise Unfiltered. 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 Sinise Unfiltered. Let's talk about sports and the politics. Let's talk about music, talk about life. If you ain't tuned in, then you out of it. A fresh, unfiltered perspective. Hottest podcast, no question. A fresh, unfiltered perspective. Hottest podcast, no question. Sinise Unfiltered.
What up? This your boy, Ant, and welcome to the Sinise Unfiltered podcast. Thank you for all the love and support you guys have been showing me. So listen, back in maybe October last year, I did an interview with Dawn Robinson from En Vogue and Lucy Pearl. And I got a lot of good feedback. So now I'm finally going to go ahead and put it on the podcast. So I hope you guys enjoy the interview. She tells you what happened, you know, and would involve her side of the story and a whole bunch of other great things. You know, during the 90s, I don't think there was a better time for female R&B groups. You had groups like 702, Brownstone, Change of Faces, Janae, Total, Escape, SWV, Destiny's Child, TLC. But to me, if there was no En Vogue, there would be none of those other groups. Talk about En Vogue, two American Music Awards, one Billboard Award, seven MTV Awards, three Soul Train Awards, one Lady Soul Train Award, nominated for seven Grammys. And this is still crazy to me. They never, ever won a Grammy, which is crazy. But fellas, y'all know what I'm talking about. When that Hold On video came out, and they was in those black tight dresses. Goodness gracious. But yo, I hope you guys enjoy the interview. Love, live life. Here we go. Talk to him, Dawn. There's no En Vogue without Dawn Robinson, baby.
Welcome. Hi. I'm great. How are you?
Doing awesome. Thanks for joining me. Honored to have you.
I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I can better, yes.
Okay. I got to get to the microphone. That probably will help.
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Honored to have you here. I've been a big En Vogue fan from the beginning. And
yay! Thank you so much.
And as a young teenage boy in the 90s, I want to thank you for the Hold On video. Thank you so much.
I don't know why I'm saying you're welcome, because I don't know what you did with that video. So I didn't do anything,
but the video was just awesome.
You're so welcome, though. No, we got the guys with those little black dresses. That was so good.
Thank you. I've been a big fan. You know, I remember back in the 90s, you all came to Rochester, New York, where I'm from. And I believe you stayed at the Hyatt Hotel.
Yes, exactly.
At the Hyatt Hotel, you all stayed.
Oh, my gosh, really?
One of my friend's mom works there, and he was like, hey, my mom said in a Vogue check-in last night. I was like, oh, real? So the store I worked at was like a minute from the hotel. So on my lunch break, I'm sitting outside trying to get a glimpse of you all. Never saw y'all. Broke my heart.
Never saw us. Oh my goodness, that's so funny. So sorry.
So you're in California?
I'm sorry.
Are you in Cali? You're in California?
California? Oh, no, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not in California anymore. I've been in Vegas for about 4 years now.
Oh, okay, Vegas. Okay, my boy's going to Vegas.
Yeah. So
how's everything going with the COVID over there in Vegas?
it's like it is anywhere else. You just gotta bear with it, get through it, and it's life. You know, things have changed considerably, but you can't let it get you down. I mean, it's just what it is. You gotta be cautious and wear your mask, which I hate as well. It's just what it is, you know. It's not to allow it to change us and be so angry about it. Like, some people are just like, I gotta stay home, and I gotta get, it's like, you didn't like that job anyway. You didn't like going to work anyway, so stop complaining. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not gonna last forever.
Yeah, hopefully we're doing a little funny perfection and get back to normal, because this is crazy.
Well, normal wasn't good either, though. I gotta say, normal wasn't good either. Normal, we were over consuming, we were over polluting the air, we were buying that we didn't need, and now the skies are a lot cleaner. Supposedly the oceans are a lot cleaner. I mean, the planet is healing. Normal wasn't good either. In a way, this is kind of a good thing, because not the COVID part, but the fact that people had to stay home and slow down a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
More, we buy too much, also. We consume too much, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And more family time now. Yeah.
So, as far as the election, how do you think the election is going?
The election, I don't talk about too much, because I don't like to persuade people's opinions as a celebrity, but again, that is what it is as well. It's always been that way. It's no different. I don't see why people are so up in arms. It's like, none of the presidents have ever done anything for us as Black people. Not even Obama.
Yeah.
That didn't change anything. Yeah. He was in there for 8 years. Even Biden, who's running as vice president, was his vice president. And some of the things that he said over the years, I'm with either, like, I don't want my children to go to school in a jungle, because they were trying to segregate the schools or something at one point. You know, he's shown his ass as well. So nobody has to hear. Yes, we do have a crazy president, but he's not a president. He said it from the beginning, he wasn't going to be presidential. And he has proven himself as such. So they said that he's done a lot of things, passing laws for Black people. I'm like, I need to see that. I haven't seen that with Trump. I call him Chump. I call Biden, I call him Blinden and Chump. I have to see it for myself. I don't know for sure what's going on. I just put it in God's hands, because the only ruler and the only maker of this place I know is God. So I don't listen too much to politicians. I get too angry. Yeah. And we're not in control anyway. They tell us right away. I mean, I posted something on my Instagram page the other day. It says something from Elijah Muhammad. I'm not into the Nation of Islam, but he was saying, don't get all caught up in these elections, because they're not for us.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of lies and a bunch of rhetoric, you know? So I just tried not to stay. I do my part in the world, and I keep close to God. I go within more than I go without. Out there is some mess. It's a bunch of mess, bunch of anger, crazy people doing stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So when did you realize you had the gift to think?
I realized that, my dad realized it when I was like, I think it was 2 years old. I was singing in the car with him and started harmonizing over a Beatles song that was out at the time, Michel My Belle. And it was mostly French, so my mother didn't believe that I could do it until he actually played it at home. And she was like, oh my, you know, 2 years old, I was starting to talk. I wasn't even talking yet. But on my own, my mom used to buy, my parents separated when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And my mother would buy whatever female was out at the time, she would buy their records for me. And I would just sing with everybody in the car, especially. And then on the radio. And then as far as at home, I would go ahead and sing with my version of doing voice lessons was to sing with the vocalist that had the lowest voice first. So I would start out with Chaka Khan and Stephanie Mills, maybe. What's her name? Jazz singer. I would sing with her. Sometimes Sarah Vaughan, because she was a very low tone. And then I would go up to Minnie Riperton and sing all those high notes and all that stuff
And so
what, 9? You know, when I really knew that I had something. And from there, my mom, again, would continue to buy records and stuff like that and try to get me into pageants, local, not pageants so much as like talent shows.
Who were some of your biggest influences growing up, you think?
Some of my biggest influences, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. It runs the gamut because my father would bring in a lot of the rock and roll stuff. And my mother would, of course, have they both loved this, you know, the Motown sound and the Detroit sound and all that. Curtis Mayfield, Bootsy, you know what I mean? Everybody like that. And then my father would bring in the Beatles, like I said. He would bring in Led Zeppelin. Big influence with the Beatles, huge. That was probably the biggest influence in my life. And I learned a lot of harmonies from them as well. The Beatles, as well as the Carpenters, the brother and sister team, they had amazing harmonies. Elton John. And my mom loved that music too. She would play Chicago, the Eagles. You know, I just didn't grow up with black. Me too. I didn't just grow up with the black music in my home. Just because we were a black family doesn't mean that they didn't allow other music to come in. There was a there's an artist named Sergio Mendez, and at the time he had an album called Brazil 66, and I would listen to Masquenada, which is like a Brazilian song. It's all in Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
Masquenada, sai de mim da frente que quero passar. It's all in Portuguese, and I would sing that with them like it was nothing. Like I learned that because my parents would play that kind of music in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those are my musically. Tom Jones, you know, Ray Charles, yeah, all of it, everything.
So how was Vogue born? How did you get into Vogue?
How did I get into it? I was at an all-day concert, and it's called Summer Jam in the Bay Area, and it's about 22 to 25,000, depending on the year, people there. In attendance, and I was 10th row from the front of the stage with my good friend at the time. We were like 2 years out of high school, and 3 years out of high school, and we were there. And this guy, when we went to the bathroom, really it was a moment to check guys out. So we went to we left our seats and we went to check out guys and just kind of look around. And we ended up getting a soda, and before we went to that concession stand, this guy asked me right when we got to the top of our section, he said, "Excuse me," and I looked at him and he said, we both looked at him and I said, are you a model? Whatever. And I played him off and I went to the bathroom, right? We went to the restroom and then we got the popcorn, then we came back, he was still standing in the same section, and he said, "Excuse me, I'm the guy who just asked you if you were a model." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "Are you a singer?" Oh, now you got my attention. Woo! What? Yes. And I just stopped and I talked to him. She went back to her seat and I talked to him about a good hour. So Cover Girls came on and left. Stevie B came on and left. Sweet Sensation, I think, came on. All these bands came on and left because I was standing in with him that long. And then the next day he came to my parents' house to actually hear if I can sing, because he didn't know. And he said, "Yeah, my friends are doing an audition for a girl group." And that was it. I went to the audition, and I didn't want to be there. I was too nervous. I kept telling my sister, "Please take me home." Because Maxine was living outside of her home. Terry was in college. Cindy was a child star at 12. She had traveled back and forth to Japan with her sister and did plays. She was Miss California, or she had ran for Miss California, but she was Miss Oakland. And I just felt like, why am I here? Like, these women have done a lot in their lives, and I haven't done. I'm still living at home with my parents. I'm 21. I was 20, and then by the time the group came out, I was 21. I had a birthday, so I did not belong. I didn't feel comfortable at all, and yeah, that it was. It was great that I stayed because my sister, if my mom, had asked me to take me to the audition. Mm. And I was like, you know, Ma, I want Data to take me because, you know, she's my younger sister, but we're still close in age. If you're my mom, I don't want you hanging out with me at an audition, you know. But if my mom would have brought me, I think about that to this day. I talk to her about it all the time. If she would have brought me, every single time I said I wanted to leave, every single time I said, Dana, my sister, take me home. Let's go. Let's go home. She's like, no, no, we're here. You're here and you're going to do this. No, I'm not taking you home. And my mom would have said, okay, are you nervous? Are you really nervous? You know, she would have said, no, let's go. She would have taken me home. So I'm glad my sister was there because she wasn't having it. She wasn't hearing it. She cursed me out at a certain point. She was like tired of me asking her all day long. And she finally said, go in front of everybody. You wanted this. You asked to come here and you're going to stay here and do this audition. You're good. And you're going to sing your ass today, your ass off today. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, she just embarrassed me because she was like, no, you're not going to leave. You're not going to use this excuse to go home because you're nervous.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
So being part of Vogue and being a celebrity, of course, you see all the highs, you know, for us looking at you guys, man, the touring, the money, the glamour and all that.
Right.
What are some highs you had with Vogue and being a celebrity?
Oh, boy. Yeah, like you said, the highs and lows do come. I would say one of the highs was hearing our record on the radio the first time. So Hold On was on the radio at 6 a.m., which is not drive time at all. Drive time is like 8 a.m., and then another drive time is 3 p.m. So, you know, 6 a.m., nobody's listening. But my stepdad was at work, and he called my mom, and she was getting up to get started, ready for work as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to get up because I didn't have to be at work until 10, so I was, like, knocked out. And she came running in the room and Dawn, wake up. You know, Bobby, my stepdad, I called her at work to tell her that our song was on the radio. So that was a huge highlight. I could barely think because I was still asleep. My brain was still asleep. But we turned on the stereo and danced around in my room and just screaming like, oh, my God, you know, this is big. So that was a huge moment. Getting in the group, that was a huge moment as well. But since I've been in the group, yeah, radio song on the radio and then what else? Probably knowing that our song was number one on the charts. That was another big one. Mm-hmm. On the Billboard charts. And then that our album was number one on the Billboard charts, that we were nominated for our first award. So that was huge. Nominated for a Grammy, I'd say, knocked everything else out. You know, the American Music Awards are great. Soul Train Awards, all that is wonderful, but when you get nominated for a Grammy, that's a whole nother league. You know, it just changes everything. Huh?
I want to ask you about that, because to me, for the 90s, in Vogue set the standard. You know,
yes.
TLC, Brownstone, SWC, Change of Faces, you all set the standard, right? Oop. And I was doing my research, and you know, you won two MA, one Billboard Award, three Soul Train Awards, one Lady Soul Train Award, seven MTV awards. And if somebody would ask me this question for $1 million, I would have got it mm-hmm. wrong. I did not know En Vogue never won a Grammy.
Never won a Grammy.
You were nominated seven times and didn't get one. That was just mind-boggling.
Exactly. It boggles my mind too. And you know, I think I was with them for 7 years, so we couldn't get any more nominations after that. But I think we eventually would have won one if I stayed in the group. Yeah. We deserved it. And I won't say that it wasn't fun losing, because everybody's like, oh, it's okay. You know, the better one won. No, we deserved one. We deserved it. We did a lot of work to get to where we were. And thank you. So there's nothing wrong with saying that. I'm very proud of the work we did. But I do wish that we would have won a Grammy. What they gave us was, it looks like a silver dollar or a platinum, like a gold medal mm-hmm. or a silver medal. That's what they give you. It looks like that. And it says, we commemorate that this year you were nominated for a Grammy. And it's nice. And it has our name on it, but it's not a Grammy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know why we didn't win any of that. I was like, who is on the board of Grammy board? Who's like voting here?
Yeah,
I didn't get that.
So, you know, you were involved, you left and came back a few times. What went wrong? And there's a lot of things we heard over the years. I got you here, and I want to hear it straight from you. What went wrong with Invoke?
Well, the first time that I left the group in 97 was because we were only making two pennies a record. So, there were two parts to that. The record company came to us because they knew that we were going to renegotiate our contract. And at that time, for the first two albums, for the first three albums of our career, we did our albums under the same term as the first album. So the terms for the first album only paid us two pennies a record.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, this is a problem. And I didn't see it at first. I can't say that right away I was understanding exactly what was going on with Invoke. So, but after a while, our first time on BET Awards, I asked our manager, I said to him, David Lombard is his name. And I said, David, I brought him to the backstages because I didn't want to talk in front of Cindy, Terry, and Maxine. I just had to ask him, we just got back from London for the first time. Why are we not making money? You know, why is it that we've gone multi-platinum with our first album, but we're not making money? He said, oh, that's a pie in the sky. You know, you got to sell millions of albums. I said, but we did. We've sold millions of albums, you know, and we're huge overseas. We just saw all of that. And he said, yeah, but that, you know, it's going to take some time. And I was like, okay, I don't get this. The second album we did, we went under the same terms as the first album. Meaning we didn't renegotiate. And when you go platinum or sell a million albums, million copies, you're supposed to go in and tear up that old contract and go in and renegotiate for a new term or new terms. Now you have leverage. Now you have a platform to stand on because you've just sold a million copies. So we were at 4 million by the time I asked him that question. We had sold many millions of records. Yeah. And I was like, a pie in the sky? Like, what are you talking about? And then when we started the second album, our producer bought a mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was, okay, wait a minute. So yeah, I'm living in a ground floor. I'm living in a ground, exactly. I'm living in a ground floor apartment. And I'm driving a little Ford Fiesta with an oil leak. And my producer just brought a brand new Porsche. Every year he would lease a new Porsche. And we can't even afford to make ends meet. Like, we're struggling here, and you just bought a mansion? It's not to say that he didn't deserve the mansion, because he did. He worked hard, too. He had other groups. He had the Tonys before us, Tony, Tony, Tony. But we deserved it as well. Like, where is ours? That's all I was asking. How come we don't have the same thing that you have? Yeah, so I was angry about it, and I kept asking my manager, and he kept saying, our manager was the same manager for our producers. So from the beginning, that was a conflict of interest. Okay. That was huge. You're not supposed to have the same management as your producers. That's like a problem. So in other words, if you and your wife, I'm just saying that you're married, you get a divorce, and your friend is your attorney, but your friend has been friends with both of you. He knows your wife, he knows you, but he's your friend first. He's going to have your back more than he is your wife.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because his alliance is with you. You brought him to the table. You're the reason that he met your wife. So that's how it was with our producer, our manager. He was our producer's manager first, and he was going to have their backs first. And so that was one of the things I kept saying to them. You guys were only making two pennies a record. We got to change our deal. We got to go back in. And Maxine was the only one that I would talk to about that. And she would always say, okay, tomorrow we're going to get Terry and Cindy on the phone and we're going to talk to them about this and let them know exactly what you're saying. You're right, Dawn. You know, we got to get this right. And I was like, okay, cool. And the next day I call her and I'm like, okay, you ready to call them? She's like, well, I talked to Denny last night, our producer. I talked to Denny last night and, you know, he talked me out of it. And he said that we don't have a group and it's a mess. And Terry's over here with me because Terry was dating him at the time. And so it continued to fall apart. It just was not, you know, what it could have been.
Yeah.
So that's why I left the first time. And it was also because the record company had come to Terry first to ask her to do a solo album. Mm-hmm. She did the solo album. We supported her, Cindy, to see her first debut show. She had a video budget. She had an album budget to record a whole album. And we had already agreed prior to that because our two pennies a record still exists, we're getting ready to renegotiate our contract and we're not going to go in the studio we agreed to sit it out. You know what I mean? That we weren't going to go in the studio and sing anything, not a note, until they renegotiate our contract. And because we agreed on that, when Terry was in the studio, we were like, why are you in the studio? What are you doing? We're supposed to be standing in solidarity together as a group, the four of us. And you're in the studio by yourself. What is up? And she's like, well, you know, me and Denny have our thing and I don't agree with you guys. And you guys can just make decisions without me. And I was like, Terry, we can't make decisions without you.
Yeah.
We signed our contract as a group. So it's four of us. And we're supposed to be a group as four of us. And, you know, Sylvia Rohn is not going to have us coming to her without you. So we can't renegotiate our contract until you're with us. So, yeah, leave the studio. She's like, well, no, I'm kind of having fun right now and I like what we're recording. So she basically stayed there and did her solo album, what would have been an En Vogue album.
Oh, wow.
And I'm kind of glad because I really don't love her solo album. Not being shady, I'm just being real.
Yeah,
I didn't love it, but she ended up doing that with them, with her, our producers, and then that divided the group. So that was really the start of us falling apart at that time. It divided the group a lot. We didn't care about her relationship with him. We just cared if she gave him precedence over us. And she didn't have the group's back. She had her man's back, and that's a problem. Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to make it so the light hits me. Yeah, so those were the two reasons that I left En Vogue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know,
what's your relationship with all the girls right now?
There isn't one. It's just when you leave a job, you don't hang out. Usually, you typically don't do that, you know?
Yeah.
We weren't very close to begin with, and there was a lot of stuff that happened with En Vogue. I was always the blame for everything, and I got tired of that. So at one point I called them out on it. Maxine helped me with that because we were in a meeting together. And on the back of the bus, we would always watch our VHS tapes of the show. So on tour, on MC Hammer tour, we would look at our videos and kind of critique, you know, each other. But it ended up being that they would always critique me.
Yeah.
And at one point I got pissed off and I left out of the back lounge area because we had VHS tapes. So we would look at the VCR and critique, oh, look at those dance steps. Oh, she did this, she did that. And it was always about me. And I was like, I'm not having this, not one more time. So I left out and I went to my bunk and Maxine came out and I called her over. And she's like, what's up? And I said, Max, if we were talking about you like this every single time we did a show, how would you feel?
Yeah.
You know, how would you feel if it was always about you, what you did wrong, how you did these dance steps wrong, or you sang this note and it wasn't right, or, you know, she's like, Dawn, say no more, you know, let's go talk. And we went into the back lounge and she grabbed the remote from Terry and she said, turn this off. She turned off the VCR. It was up on the wall in the back of the bus. And she said, we treat Dawn totally different. And Cindy said, no, we treat her just exactly like everyone else. She said, no, Cindy, no. We treat Dawn totally different. We critique her for stuff and we haven't critiqued anything that any of us have done. We never look at each other's dance steps. We never say, and she said, and Dawn, tell them what you said to me. And I said, well, Hold On has been our number one hit from the very beginning. Terry starts it out. She starts it out with that note. But every single time we get on stage or on TV, she starts it too low. Too high or too low. It's never the actual note that we're supposed to sing. And we don't critique her about it.
Yeah.
So why do we critique Dawn? That's not okay. I'm not having it anymore. So she had my back for that. She really did. But it continued to be that, even though she critiqued me, she helped me in that critique, it still continued to be treating Dawn differently. Like, so when we had the Rough Town deal situation going, they ended up signing, that was 2009. We came together for our 10-year anniversary. And there were deals on the table, but not the right ones. And all of a sudden, at one point, we had Sony Records, we had Warner Brothers, and we had a label called Rough Town. Mm-hmm. And Rough Town was the least of the three, it was the smallest of the three, and they didn't have great terms either. I thought Warner Brothers was the best deal, but we weren't solidified on that. Cindy loved Sony because Sony was, sorry, I'm in the chair. Sony was, Sony had, they wanted to redo like all the old girl group songs, so, hits. So like My Boyfriend's Back and You're Gonna Be in Trouble by the Shangri-Las, I think it is. And then Stop in the Name of Love by the Supremes, redo all of those hits. But I was like, well, the only people that are going to get paid from those hits are the people that wrote them. So why are we doing those? That doesn't make sense to take that deal. So Smokey Robinson is going to get paid again, and we're not getting paid at all. So they were like, okay, it makes sense, you know. But then there was another deal, Rough Town. Warner Brothers was great because Warner Brothers was giving us whatever we wanted. And I mean, they wanted to do a play based on In Vogue's life. They wanted to do a movie based on In Vogue's life, just like Dreamgirls, but for real, about us.
Oh.
Yeah, they were offering us a lot, and the deals on the table were really significant. And for whatever reason, the girls didn't take that one. They took the Rough Town deal. So I came back to the group, and I had to leave again because they did that. A group doesn't work if there's one member missing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't sign with you guys, so why am I here? I'm going to help you promote the album that you guys do without me, so why am I here? So I had to leave again.
Let me ask you about that, because you know I'm an 80s guy. I love 80s music. And I know when Steve Perry left Journey, it wasn't the same.
I've seen them in concert so much.
Oh, yeah?
I used to watch Journey in concert all the time. I went many, like in high school, probably 3-4 times to see them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not the same without him.
Yeah, and then like, and even like with Kool & the Gang and Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, members leave or pass on, and they try to add younger people in to enter the group, and it's just not the same anymore. How do you feel having some of the members in the Vogue still performing as the Vogue, and now there's a whole group?
I mean, that's fine with me. They still got to go on. They don't stop just because one member is gone, or two members in this case. You still got to keep making a living. What I don't like is I heard that the Temptations were okay when Eddie Kendricks left and David Ruffin left. The group continued to go on as the Temptations, and then David and Eddie started their own Temptations. So everybody got to eat. Everybody got to make money. Nobody was pissed at the other guys. They may have been upset about it, but they didn't put it out in the press and say all these negative things about them. They just went on, and everybody got to eat. Everybody still made money from what they created together. And in my case, the girls put me down. Maxine has admitted to me that they went out telling the world that I was being difficult, that I wanted to go solo. I'm like, well, that doesn't really make sense. I wish the press would have thought about that because... move over a little bit, because they would have seen that Dawn didn't leave and go solo. Dawn went to another group. I went and did Lucy Pearl. I didn't go solo. You know what I mean? So I don't understand how the press didn't kind of put two and two together and say, what? Oh, she didn't leave. She's still in another group. She didn't go solo. She did leave the group, but she didn't go solo. I'm not mad at anybody that continues to make money. What I'm mad at is that they stopped me from making money. They had me sign a cease and desist that I couldn't use the name In Vogue when I left. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So basically you want me to starve and not make it on my own. That to me is greedy. That's greedy. Because you guys are making money with it. I helped make that. I helped create that name. Definitely. Maxine helped create
that
name.
There's no Dawn without In Vogue. Somebody just posted it on the comment and that's damn sure true.
Right, there's no In Vogue without me. Yeah. Thank you, Duran. I see you there. Hey, guys.
What's your favorite In Vogue track?
Don't Let Go, of course. Yes. Come on.
That's my favorite one, too. And who was the lead singer on that one?
Yeah!
It's Dawn, yes. Yeah, I love that track.
Yeah. But no, it's not just for that reason, but it's such an amazing song. Like, it's a ballad, but it's got that rock guitar and the piano. Hey, mm-hmm. Sean, you're back again. I see you guys. It's the guitar. Raheem. What's up, Raheem? Grandmaster Flash in the house. What? Yes. Tanya, I see you. Hey, girly. Yeah, so it wasn't just because I sang lead. I just happened to sing lead on that. But they, you know, the stories that come back after a while, people do things in the dark that don't think you're going to find out later. So what's done in the dark comes to the light, as they say. And I found out, I was told while we were recording Don't Let Go that the girls were trying to get me out of the group.
Oh, wow.
And, yep, And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And I didn't know. I was none the wiser. And so when they came to the studio the next day, this person told me, don't say anything. Don't say you got it from me, but just, you know, be aware of what's going on. So, and they wanted the girls, I had sung the lead on both verses and most of the background. Cause what's it gonna be? Cause I can't pretend. I'm sorry. I'm not warmed up. So don't hold me tight and don't let go. So they don't come in until don't let go. You have the right to don't let go. They don't come on into that part. So I sang most of the background too. And they came to the studio. He said, when they come in, they're going to try to sing lead on your verses. I got to try that because that's what the record company wants. Because again, they're trying to get you out of the group. And I was like, okay. And so when they came in, I had to be like, oh, hey, Cindy, hi, Terry Max. Ooh, hey. I had to act like everything was all good, but I knew what was going on. And they tried to sing my parts. It did not work. It did not work. And I just sat back and I was like, Father, you are so good. Because, again, what's done in the dark. Hey, Phonice, I see you. Hey, Wonder. I don't know who that is. What's done in the dark comes to light. And God revealed the whole thing. And I was like, wow, you guys really tried it. And it makes no sense. We are, at that time especially, one of the biggest girl groups in the world.
Definitely.
And we're not paid. And I've been here for 8 years, you guys. 8 years we've been together, and we haven't been paid. But everybody around us, everybody that's trying to divide and conquer us, have been paid very well because of us. So I just didn't understand why they didn't have my back against the record company. We could have fought together against them. There's strength in numbers. And they didn't hear that. So I just don't even I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. And again, we were making everybody richer, and I guess they thought they could go on without me. One monkey don't stop no show, but I sure did. I shut it down.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even because I was trying. It's because you guys, first of all, you did it at the wrong time, which is good for me, but bad for them. Mm-hmm. I sang lead on the biggest hit. You guys thought you could do it without me. That made no sense. None. You kept Terry in the group. She did a solo album. She did hers first. The record company came to both of us, like I said. But they came to her first. She did her album first. She put her album out, had tour support, all of that stuff. And I didn't have the same thing for my album. But you guys are kicking me out and you're keeping Terry. I still don't understand to this day why they thought that was okay to do.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. So in 2019, you all performed for the first time in a long time. How was that feel? How was the vibe?
In 2019?
2019, yeah.
Yeah, last year, yep. It was different, I gotta say. It was weird. It felt like I was outside of something that I knew was big, but it wasn't mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Terry looked the same, Cindy looked the same, but the feeling wasn't the same. Maxine and I had already been working together for a while, but it didn't feel the same. It didn't feel like the En Vogue energy, and that's because Rona was there. No shade, guys. I swear to you, I promise on my father's grave, and he's been gone for 5 years now, 6 years now. There's no shade. It just didn't feel right with her. And Terry has always been hilarious. Terry, I would always tell her, you missed your calling. You should have been a comedian. Or did that too, as well as singing, because she's so funny, naturally hilarious. There's pictures of her doing silly stuff because she laughs. Sometimes women can be not as silly as guys because we don't want guys to laugh at us. So we don't make fun of ourselves. And Terry makes fun of herself. She don't care. She does stuff and she just makes us laugh. She's hilarious. And so we were cracking up at her the whole time, but it was still, it just wasn't the same. We couldn't talk about old stuff because Rona wasn't a part of it. You know, so we couldn't bring up stuff because we didn't want her to feel like she was outside. And I initially didn't want to do the charity, so I said no. And that's why they brought Rona in to replace me, because they wanted four girls. Sylvia Roan requested the original group. She did not want Rona. It was no shade to Rona. She just wanted the group that she created. She signed us to Atlantic Records, so that's what she wanted. And it just didn't feel right. It felt weird. It just was weird. We laughed like we usually laugh, but I wasn't in condition either. Like, you know, when you're not, we would do our show for an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes, and we would dance from the top of the show to the end of the show, straight, in high heels. And I wasn't conditioned. My legs were not ready for that at all. So I just was trying to get stuff. Me and Maxime, we just felt out of pocket. It didn't feel right. And I asked if I could have somebody document this whole thing and film it for us. And, you know, their manager said yes at first. And then the next day he said, well, the girls don't want it yet. And I said, well, you know, it makes sense. Why don't I have somebody come and document everything and film it the day of the show? Because we got four days of rehearsal. Why don't I have? And he said, okay, I'll let you know. And I'm still waiting to this day. Maxine asked him the same thing, and she's still waiting too. He never gave us an answer. So, but the whole time, Rona was filming. The whole time, Rona was taking pictures. We didn't get to do any of that. So none of the reunion for the 30 years, really, is what it was. 30-year reunion was documented for me and Maxine. But they got everything. And our producer, our choreographer was filming as well. So he got all of it. Like, because he was doing that supposedly for research. You know, he usually films us and then shows us what we do wrong, how we can do this better. You got to be on that end. You don't come here yet first. You walk around to that side and then you dance over here a little bit. You know what I mean? He's giving us critique. But he still got everything. And I got nothing. Maxine and I had nothing.
Wow. So I guess it's safe to say there won't be an En Vogue reunion tour anytime soon.
Nope. Not with me anyway. Not with me.
I want to ask you. You're talking about Maxine Jones.
If they treated us fairly, if they treated me, I'll speak for me. If they treated me fairly, I would go back in a heartbeat. I don't want, this is just my opinion, and some people get upset because they are Rona fans, and that's great. But I don't think Rona should be there. For our 30-year reunion, I wanted her to sit back and just let us do our thing and let us celebrate that year with our fans by ourselves before she was a part of it.
All of us feel the same way.
Thank you so much. Your name is Anthony, right?
That one out. Yes, ma'am.
Anthony? Yeah. Anthony, thank you so much for saying that, because sometimes I sound like I'm hating or that I'm partial to the original En Vogue, and I'm not. I am to a certain part, a point, because I know what we did together, our harmonies were blending like sisters. Rona doesn't have that same sound as us, so it's just different. Cindy and Terry hired her, and I think Cindy and Terry, when that 13 years comes up for their reunion, need to celebrate with her. But for now, I thought this should have been our year to celebrate with our fans what we created before Rona was there.
So I know you and Maxine formed the Funky Divas last year. Are we going to have
more of that? Yeah,
we
tried. Huh?
Are we going to have more of that?
No, because Cindy and Terry fought for the name Funky Divas. They came after us for Funky Divas. Maxine and I weren't working together anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. But we were trying to work some things out because some stuff happened in the past that I couldn't get over. And so we could have worked through that and talked about it and worked it out. But then Cindy and Terry come, and they want to fight us for the name Funky Divas, too. And I was like, how many names can you bitches have at one time? How many names? Come on. You got En Vogue already. You've been making money hand over fist for what Maxine and I helped build. And we didn't get to participate in that or to partake in that. And even Rona got paid for the name that we created.
That's crazy.
And now you want to come for Funky Divas, too? Oh, Louise, Cindy called me, and I still have her voicemail on my phone from February or January. You know, we use the name occasionally for merchandising or some bullshit. I'm sorry for cursing, but no, you don't.
No, you're all right. You're all right.
No, they don't.
We're on filter. We're on filter. You say what you want.
Exactly. That's the sound. High five to you. Yeah, they don't. So... yeah, I just felt like you guys are fighting for another name because you know that Maxine and I are out there and we are a threat to you. That's all it was. Yeah. Because I just took a picture. I'm going to put it up on my Instagram page, but there's a picture of a girl group called Funky Divas. Wow. And it was on Las Vegas Boulevard. I took a picture of the billboard and I went and found their song online. It's called Dancing in the Streets. So I don't know if it's a real group or what, but it had Funky Divas. It's got four women. And then their song is called Dancing in the Streets. Like, they redid Dancing in the Streets by Martha and the Vandellas. So I was like, okay, are they going to go after them the way they came after me and Maxine? Because I was like this. I felt like Maxine, I told her, I'm not willing to pay. I don't even have the money to pay for a trademark attorney. Because we bought the trademark. Maxine and I did all that. And I was like, I don't want to have to spend money on a trademark attorney to go and fight these witches for the name. They already have Invoke. Like, get off our backs, you know? Yeah. You weren't thinking about that name. We sometimes people introduce us as that every now and then. And when we were all in the group together, that was the last time you were called the Funky Divas. Because we were all together. We had an album called Funky Divas. So when they would introduce us an award show or a talk show or in concert, the Funky Divas, it was that. So you're not using the name now. What are you talking about? You guys are full of it. And because we didn't fight back, the attorney granted them the name. So that hurt my heart because Maxine and I worked for that. I know we weren't working together either anymore, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So, you know, you left in Vogue, you did your solo thing, and then Lucy Pearl with Raphael Sadiq, Alicia Muhammad from Tribe Called Quest, you know, wrapping up on Tony, and you
right.
Vogue. I thought it was a great album.
What Thank happened you. With
that? How come we never got a second album?
It was only supposed to be a one-off. That's all it was,
really?
A one-off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one album deal. That's all it was from the very beginning. So when they hit me up in 1999, Raphael was looking for me for a while, and he couldn't find me. There was no social media back then. So I don't know how he ended up finding me, but Cassandra Mills at the time was my manager. She was a big head honcho at Giant Records. She used to run Giant Records, black woman. So she had a huge position there. And then when it folded, she became a manager. And she was managing me. And she, I forgot how I found out. But when she told me that Raphael came to her and she told him no, I had to like look at her crazy, like sideways. Like, what are you telling me that? So you, there's an opportunity for me to be in another group. And you told Raphael what now? You told him no? Oh, that don't work for me. Like, mm-mm. And I just felt like she looked at it. And there was a few things that led up to me firing her, but that was the crux of it right there. You do not look at an opportunity for me and tell the person no before you even let me know that it exists. You know, it's like, give me the decency of saying, hey, Dawn, I know you're working on your solo album right now. You know, you're not thinking about going back to a group, but there's an opportunity. It's like, okay, wait a minute, let's talk about this. Because what I loved about Lucy Pearl, which is what I told Bob Jameson. Bob Jameson is the head, at the time, was the head of the R&B, was the head of all of RCA, not just R&B. Or maybe it was just R&B and I didn't know that. But anyway, I had a deal on the table with him as a solo artist. And when Raphael came to me, he's like, man, I've been looking for you for a minute. I asked your manager if you could do a group with me, and this idea that I have for me and you and Ali Shaheed Muhammad from Tribe Called Quest. And I was like, whoa, what are you saying? And I was like, yes. So I called her. I said, I have to let you go. Hey, Tanya. Oh, somebody said, get the mic closer to me. I can't get the mic closer to me. It's going to be like this. It's going to be in my nostrils, on my forehead. Can you turn me up a little bit, maybe, Anthony? Is it on your end? Because I'm up as high as I can go.
No, mine is really loud. My ears are blowing up right now.
Really? Wow, you're super low for me, but I think I'm loud for myself, too. So, Tanya, I'm sorry you can't hear me well. But when Cassandra did that, I fired her, and I did the Lucy Pearl project, and I turned down RCA for Raphael to do Lucy Pearl. So, and I just thought, okay, it's going to be better for me to not go solo yet and do another project just to parlay myself back into the world and let people see I've been gone for a year from In Vogue. I just think that this is a better situation and I won't be afraid being out on my own, you know, because usually I'm used to seeing two girls to my left and one to my right, or two to my right and one to my left. And now I'm going to be on my own. That's scary. So I just thought Lucy Pearl made a lot more sense. And yeah, so when she said that the opportunity was there, but she didn't tell me, then I was like, okay, you're fired.
You're fired.
You're done. You're done. You're fired. Yeah.
Is there any artist past or present that you want to work with that you haven't worked with?
Oh my gosh. I wish you'd have given me these questions so I could think about it. Oh, there's so many great artists. Let me see. This is too dark. You know what? Hold on one moment, Anthony. Let me see if I can. Oh, that's too bright. Any artist that I want to work with that I have. I love Usher's voice. I love his sound. I think he's amazing. I'd love to work with him. I would love to work with, oh my God, it's like Bonnie Raitt is amazing. I love her voice. I love, there's some new artists as well. I just don't know their names, but I like their material.
Yeah.
Gwen Stefani, I've always wanted to work with her because I love her pop rock craziness. You know what I mean? I love that sound. I love Maroon 5. I would work with them too. I think they're incredible. Mary, I'd love to do some with Mary. She's amazing.
She's doing awesome on Power, by the way. That role fits her great.
Who?
Power? Mary Jane?
Mary? Oh, I haven't seen it. Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Yes, Mary, really? Wow.
Their
I'm happy for
really
her.
Good.
Yeah. Good for her.
How did you enjoy the R&B Divas LA experience?
Who's B. Tanya? Might be Tanya. I'm sorry. Rihanna and Janet. Yes, I would. I would work with them, Alana. I'm sorry. Gwen Stefani is cool. What'd you say, Anthony? I'm sorry. One more time.
So how did you enjoy the R&B Divas LA experience, that show?
R&B Divas LA experience, you said?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that. What do you mean? It's on now?
No. I said, how was your experience on that show? How did you like
it? How was my experience on the show? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You want the truth? Enough about the truth?
We're unfiltered. We want the truth.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was a terrible experience. It was bad. It was stupid because it could have been so great. You're talking about, I mean, the only one rightfully that could have called themselves a diva was me because I'd been around longer and Funky Divas was our album cover, but I still felt like we were black women that should have, women, period. I don't care what color, but we happen to be black, that we should have supported each other and had each other's backs, and they did not at all. It became a mudslinging fest, and I wasn't with it at all. I was glad because I showed who I was, you know, from the heart. I did a reality show, and I showed my reality. Having an abusive ex-husband, being in an abusive marriage, infertility and me not being able to have children, all of that was real for me. I don't play games with my life. So
yeah.
When they came to us about two months after filming, they were like, well, you guys are being too nice to each other. And I said, well, basically, because we're not calling each other bitches and throwing glasses at each other's faces and sleeping with each other's men or being all up in each other's business. And you guys want to say we're being too nice. But I told you guys before I did this reality show, before I signed on with you guys, that I wasn't with that whole thing.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up like that. I didn't grow up messy. I'm not going to start now on a reality show.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, go ahead. No. You're good.
And that's why I don't like these reality shows, especially with black women, because they, like you said, they want you to show the negativity.
Yeah.
Bad behavior, fighting and throwing stuff, yelling at each other, cursing each other.
Exactly.
Around. And I can't stand it. Like, I can't even watch it because it just gives such a negative vibe to our people. And you know, I commend you for being you on that show.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much. I had told them before I even signed that this is not what I want to do. And they told me, we're not going to have a negative show. We're going to have a very positive show. It's going to be different. We're trying to change the format of the way reality shows are seen. And I was like, okay, I'm down with it. And they weren't truthful. They lied. As soon as they got me on the dotted line, they were like, okay, we got her now. And they changed it. They changed their attitude towards all of us, really. But what I told the girls was, oh, that's good. Yay. Oh, it's a little too bright. But what I told the girls on the show was, it doesn't matter what production tells us. It's up to us to decide if we want to treat each other like shit or not.
Yeah.
It's up to us to be nasty to each other or be nice to each other. We have a choice. We don't have to let them tell us what to say. And we don't. And even if we do a scene where we're disagreeing on something, because that's life. You work with someone long enough, you're going to have disagreements.
Yeah.
But what we can do is resolve those differences before the show is over. So before the episode ends, we got to talk to each other like, look, I am so sorry that I said what I said. I was angry that day. I was upset and I didn't understand where you were coming from. Oh my God, I love you. It's okay. That would have been fine with me. Cause like I told them before I signed with them, I said, we have the responsibility as grown women, black women, to be seen in a certain light with our young black women. Our young black girls are watching us, and how we react to each other is how they're going to react to each other in life. They think this shit is real. It's called a reality show. Hello. And I really think they need to change that title, because it needs to be relatable TV, not reality, because it's not reality. The only one that was real on there was me. I talked about the things that were very, very private. When those tears happened and we did a scene where we were marrying ourselves and doing some promises to ourselves in a chapel. I don't know if you remember and saw that at all. But Shantae had an incredible idea. She's got a book called Will I Marry Me? Because women have this long list of things that we want men to be for us. And we don't have those things for ourselves. It's like you want him to be kind and loving and understanding and affectionate and cook dinner for you and be loving. And are you those things yourself, though? I was like, girl, you got a great idea. So we did a scene where we married ourselves and we made promises to ourselves for things that we had held ourselves for years back. So I think Kelly's was that she has been big all her life and that she hated her body, but she'll stop doing that now, that she's going to start loving herself more. It was really beautiful. I started crying with hers, and I knew by the time I got to mine, I was going to be like, so, and when we got to mine, for sure, I let it all out. The infertility, the abusive ex-husband, the fact that I can't have children, infidelity on his part, and all of that stuff, it came flowing out. And when I was done, the cameras cut. I could hear the producer say, cut. And they came over to me, and everybody came running over, all the cameramen, all the production people, and they were like, Dawn, oh my God, that's the stuff. You're going to be the favorite one on the show now, because that's the stuff that's going to get ratings. And I said, and I'm still crying. I'm blowing my nose and all that. I said, you guys, I didn't do that for ratings.
Yeah,
that's my life. I didn't do this for ratings, you guys. You're still getting it wrong. I did this because it was real. And what you heard come out, and those tears were real for me. I've tried not to cry, but I couldn't help it. So I wasn't playing games, and I don't know if you guys are or not, but no, that was real for me. So the reality show thing is not, it's too bad, because it's a beautiful format that had they followed our lives, like at the time I was dating a white guy who was from Wales, and there were a lot of fans that were having a problem with me dating a white guy. I was like, first of all, it's my life. I'm grown. Last I looked, I was grown. You may not like what I do, but you keep that to yourself. I will do what I want when I want and how I want. But he wanted to, he was a pro soccer player, supposedly a pro soccer player. I'm finding out different things now that are not true. But supposedly he was, and he would take me backstage, like at the Home Depot Center in Los Angeles, and get me, he had a jersey made. It's on my Instagram page with my name on the back and his number 5 from when he used to play professional soccer, supposedly. And so he told the production people, one time he was on set with me, and he told them, you know, the girls can do a lot more than just always going to have dinner or always going to have drinks. Like, can we, you know, I can take Dawn and some of the girls to a soccer game. It may not be the thing that black people always do, but, and I'm finding out now that a lot of black people love soccer. There's a whole community of people black people that love soccer. I didn't know that then.
It's a different experience. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch.
It's a lot of fun to watch. But it's bigger than baseball. It's bigger than soccer. Yep. It's bigger than football. I mean, it's bigger than basketball. All combined, soccer is bigger around the world than any of the other sports. So he was like, let me take them, and they can meet some of the players backstage, and they can see a game. And when he would take me to the games, we would go in the in one of the boxes. So we would go in the VIP area. And it was all kinds of food and everything there. So it was an experience that was different than what the show would know. Like, usually we go, girl, let's go have drinks. Girl, let's go to dinner. I got to talk about Shantae because she did this. I got to talk about Claudette. It's like, can't we do something else? Can't we show solidarity?
Yeah.
At one point, Claudette's son, I'm sorry, her daughter, supposedly, I'm thinking now that it didn't actually happen, but her daughter supposedly dropped. She had the iron up over her head or something on a shelf, and her daughter pulled the cord and stepped on the cord, and the the hot water spilled on her and she had burns and something like that. And I was like, okay, we can film us going to the hospital to support her. We don't have to go in her daughter's room, but let's support, you know, Claudette. They didn't want to do that either. It showed too much love. It showed too much solidarity. It showed us coming together as women and supporting each other. They didn't want that. So I was like, okay, this is some bullshit. It's just wrong. So unfortunately, it fell apart. But it showed me that what we see on TV is not what we think. They play us all the time, and they make us... It's like we're stupid because we believe it, but we don't know any better. I thought that before I did a reality show. I thought it too. I thought it was real.
So my podcast, I've been doing my podcast for about maybe 7 months now, and I had a lot of young artists on here. I had Neil from Rochester, New York. I had KJ the Ruler from Orlando. I had Richard Dreese on The Voice. And I just had Imani Gooden, New York City, who just put a great debut album about a month ago. What would your advice be to these young artists getting into the business?
Getting into the business?
In the music business, yeah.
There's a lot of advice, but, you know, when we first started, my mother had bought me a book when I was 16 called This Business of Music. This Business of Music. And it was a Bible. It was gigantic. It was so big, I could barely lift it up. It was like you had to be an attorney to understand it. It wasn't layman's terms. It wasn't something that the average person or a singer like myself at 17 or 16 could understand. So, and then eventually I got a book called All You Need to Know About the Music Business by Donald Passman. And it had a lot more information in it. But again, he's an attorney. So his point of view was from an attorney. It wasn't from an artist's point of view. Now there's so much information online. I remember redlining my first contract with Vogue and underlining stuff. It's when you redline, it's just that you underline stuff in red pen so that you can go back and ask questions about, is this right? What does this mean? I don't like this. Can we change that? Is this good for us? Is this bad for us? And I redlined my contract, but I didn't understand still, even after going to the attorney, what all the stuff meant. He explained it, but I was still like, you know, because you don't have time to really study and understand, oh, that's what it meant. Okay, this is what it is. So now you can go online and find all of that stuff. You can go on and find anything you want. It's online. You can take your entire contract and go through word for word and get answers. If you don't do that before you sign a contract today, you're crazy. That didn't exist for us back then. There was no internet. There were encyclopedias, but even my encyclopedias at home, I remember my mom telling me to look some of that stuff up, and I did, and it was terrible because there wasn't no real answers there, you know.
So what's that for you?
So I would tell, I'm sorry, I didn't say it right out. So I would tell any young person to look up your contract, look up everything you see, and figure out if it's right. Say it right out. So I would tell any young person to look up your contract, look up everything you see, and figure out if it's right for you, that contract, before you sign it. And really, I would tell them to just stay indie as much as possible. It's great to have a major record deal. It's exciting. I understand being signed to Warner Brothers is, oh my God. Being signed to, sorry, hold on. I dropped something. Being signed to Sony or, you know, Capitol Records. Come on, it's amazing. But today you have the power of the press and the power of the fans right in your hands directly. You don't have to go through them anymore. So the major labels, that's why they fell apart, because they were no longer needed. They were making money hand over fist, and the artists were the ones to suffer. I would say the black artists were the ones to suffer. Now, Ray Charles, I don't know how he could see the difference between a good contract and a bad contract, but he, whoever had his back, he was a smart man. He was very smart. And I look to him like he's my example of owning your masters. And he was on that label. He started off on Atlantic Records, and then he ended up going to CBS. I think they gave him a better deal, and Atlantic couldn't match it. So he was like, bye-bye, I'm out. And he owned his masters, and he was never broke. You know what I mean? He was never that kind of artist. So I don't know. It's just some groups and some artists end up broke and some others don't. I look at Taylor Swift. A lot of the country artists, Carrie Underwood, what's his name? Garth Brooks, Randy Travis. You don't hear these same stories in the country western world. You barely hear it in rock and roll. So the Motley Crues of the world, even though they were on our label as well, and they didn't like Sylvia Rome, they talked about her in several articles that I read, and I showed them to the girls, and I brought the article for them to read so we could take our own lives into our own hands, and we were at rehearsal. And there was a panel in the rehearsal space, and I was like, you guys, you have to read this article. It's Sylvia Rome, and she's talking about this and that, right? And when we went to lunch, it sat on the piano. And when we left for the rest of the day and we got ready to leave, I was like, okay, nobody even took the article. Nobody looked at it. Nobody read it. Yeah. So you got to be really hungry and understanding what you're capable of, and you got to know your worth, and you can't be afraid to fight for that. That's what I've noticed. Like I would always say, a warrior walks alone. A lot of times they may be the leader of everybody else. You got a group of equals. They were all my equal when we started out, but I started to wake up a lot sooner than them. And I was willing to fight when they weren't. So I'm really proud of that. But yeah, they left that article sitting there. I brought another article about Salt and Pepper taking their power back from Herbie Lovebug, who was their producer at the time. And he was like, y'all can't write hits. I'm the one who writes the hits, blah, blah, blah. And they wrote their biggest hit, which was Express Yourself. Yeah, that was, so he was wrong about them, but they wouldn't have known that if they didn't take the power of their own careers in their own hands. So I was proud of them. And again, I brought that article, Triple X was it called? Mm-hmm. What is the magazine? Source Magazine? Because it was a hip hop magazine, Source Magazine. And yeah. I brought that with me to the rehearsal, and the girls left it there, same way. Never read it, never picked it up. So you got to be hungry, and you got to be able to fight, and you got to not be afraid. And I am not afraid.
You got to keep going. So what do you have next? What does Dawn have coming out next? What are you working on?
I just started my label, Stiletto Entertainment. I'm very proud of that. Yes, thank you. And I am doing, so I'm writing my book right now, my autobiographical book about my life story. It won't chronicleize my childhood so much, because I'll come back and do another book like that later, but this is just starting from basically in Vogue and ending with Lucy Pearl a little bit. I still want to do a different book, a separate book on Lucy Pearl, because I really want to give that the attention it needs. I'm trying to still figure it out. It may be different, but and I also want to do crowdfunding to raise the money for my album. At first I was kind of like, that felt icky to me. It felt like you're asking the fans for money. But anytime we do a show or anytime we put an album out, they buy it anyway. So I'm like, why can't they help me put it together, you know? And then I started researching.
Let's help Dawn out, everybody.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you, Anthony. But it's also, as I started doing some research on other artists who have done crowdfunding. The politicians do crowdfunding to raise money for their, for their political careers. So I found out that Whoopi Goldberg did a crowdfunding thing, a campaign for a project that she had. James Franco, he's a huge star, actor.
Loved him on General Hospital.
De La Soul did, what'd you say?
I loved him on General Hospital.
James Franco was on General Hospital? What? I didn't know
Franco,
that.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Franco, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
I didn't know that at all. I thought, wow. TLC did one, Without Left Eye, of course, Rest Her Soul. De La Soul did one, speaking of soul, they did one as well. And Kristen Bell did the biggest one still to date. She did the biggest crowdfunding campaign of any artist. Hers raised, she was asking for $2.5
million. Oh, hold up.
So, she there ended you, up with, go. She, yeah, she asked for $2.5 million. And she ended up with 5.6 or 7 million.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
So we got fans asking, what's your Cash App? We got a lot of fans asking your Cash App.
Oh, my God, you guys.
You got to drop the Cash App. Everybody's asking, so drop your Cash App real quick.
I got my Cash App, y'all. I don't even know how it works. I got it. I'm still trying to use it. I use PayPal, but it won't be yet. I have to do a campaign. I have to put it out there so they see what I'm doing. Yeah. And why and how I'm doing it. So I love them. I love you guys so much for even saying you want to help. You know that. And also, I'm looking for producers for my album. So I don't, you know, I love working with the bigger names. Okay. It's great to work with a Timbaland or Rodney Jerkins, but a lot of times they come in with E. And I want to find the next big thing. I want to find, you know, there's producers out there that do incredible work that don't sound like anybody else. That's what I'm looking for. So.
I have a great producer named Kid Call Quest from Rochester, New York. Look him up. He does.
Really? Really?
Yeah, he's in a group. Ooh, called,
that's what's up.
The group is called Young, Black, and Gifted. Check them out.
Okay. I'm going to forget. I know I'm going to forget because I got to write some stuff down when I leave here.
I'll send it to you.
Please send it to me on Instagram. Exactly. I'm trying to move over here so you can still see me. Yay. Oh, my God. So Young, Gifted, and Black, that's their production company?
Young, Black, and Gifted. That's their group name.
Yeah,
his name
see,
is
I
Kid
forgot
Paul.
It already.
Yeah, I'll send it all to you.
Okay.
I want to thank you so much for coming on here and joining me. It's been an honor. I've been a fan since day one.
Thank you so much, you
know,
Anthony.
Gonna keep supporting you. And again, the group is not the same without you. We all know there's no involved without Dawn. Okay, we love you. If you're ever here in Orlando, hit me up. I'd love to meet you. I'm going to go, you know, have a drink or something.
I would love that. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. I thank you for reaching out to me because all of these interviews that I've been doing gives me a chance, a platform to talk about what happened and get it out there to the world because I haven't really talked about it before. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Definitely. Oh, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Dawn Robinson, formerly from En Vogue and Lucy Pearl. This is your boy.
Love Ant. You too, guys. Bye, Jerome.
Podcast. Make sure you guys keep supporting the podcast. Keep
bye, Sean.
Dawn.
I love you too. Phonies.
Life. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Dawn.
You're welcome. Take care, Anthony. Talk soon.
You too.
Don't forget to text me or send me that information.
I definitely will. I definitely will. All right.
Okay. Bye. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Sinise Unfiltered podcast. Make sure you tune in next week for some more unfiltered discussions. And Sinise Unfiltered maniacs, remember, if we stand together, we can change the world. Love, live life. I'm out.